Have you ever wished that everyone would just leave you alone? Right? Have you ever wished that? Right? Maybe not forever, maybe just for a day or a month or maybe a year. Just everyone go away and leave me alone, right? You've all felt that before. Have you? Thank you. I'll take that as answering for everybody. Have you ever been thankful that you had someone with you? Maybe you were going through something and you were just glad you weren't alone, that you were part of an us. See, there's something weird and wrong about us that we can so desperately want to be left alone sometimes and then so desperately want to not be alone other times. And that tension is what I'm calling the tension of us. Every us creates a tension. Think about all the us's in your life that you're a part of. Your family is an us. You know, you with your parents and your siblings, that's an us. Just you with your siblings, that's another us. You talk about us. Are you going to come to us for Thanksgiving this year or them? Right? We have all these us's. Think about your relationship with your boyfriend or girlfriend. That's an us. Or your marriage. That's an us. Think about where you go to school, right? That's an us. You're all the people who go to that school. That's us. Or the kids who are your closest friends in school. That's an us. If you go to work, your job, your department, right? That's an us. Whether you like the department you're in or not, we're an us, right? And you're part of a company. That makes you part of another us. There are us's everywhere you go. If you're living in an apartment building, guess what? You're part of the us that lives in that apartment building. If you're on a certain floor, you're part of the us that's on that floor. I'm part of the us of people who shave their head, right? There's us's everywhere you go. We're all part of all kinds of us's. You get the point, right? Your life is full of us's. And here there are two things that are true about every us in your life. The first one is this. Every us in your life introduces tension. Every us in your life introduces tension. And the second truth about every us is that every us in your life needs to include God. For the next few weeks, we're going to talk about some of the key us relationships that you and I are part of and the tensions they bring. So next week, we're going to talk about parenting and the us of parenting. And then the week after that, we're going to talk about dating and the us of dating. And the week after that, we're going to talk about what happens when the us's in our lives, our relational dreams, when they kind of fall apart and don't turn out the way we hope they would. As parents, as married couples, dating, friendships, what do you do when they fall apart? But today, I want to focus on one major us, and that's marriage. Now, I know not everyone here is married. And among those of you who aren't married, there are those who don't want to get married. There are some who do want to get married and some who've been there. So I know there's all different, you know, places we're coming from. And I don't want any of you to check out here today just because we're focusing on marriage. Because the principles that we're talking about from God's word are not just about marriage. They're about every relationship that you have in our lives. Today we're just going to talk about this principle and focus it on marriage. But for you, if you're not married, take that and take the principle and begin to use it to explore all the other relationships in your life, okay? That's the work you'll have to do because every us in your life introduces tension and every us in your life needs to have God in it. There is no us in your life that God should not be part of, must not be part of. There was once a couple who'd been married for 60 years. 60 years. Christina and I just celebrated 25 years this past Tuesday. And that feels like a really long time. 60 years they were married, and they loved each other deeply. They had a beautiful relationship. They had no secrets from each other. Nothing was hidden. They talked about everything, except for there's one thing. The wife, when they first got married, she had this shoebox, and she put it on a shelf in her closet, and she asked her husband two things. She said, please, never look inside the shoebox, and please never ask me about the contents of the shoebox. And he agreed. He said, okay. And he didn't. He never thought about it, never asked her about it, mostly because he just forgot about it. And years and years went by, and then they get to the point where they're married 60 years, and his wife becomes ill and seriously ill and ends up in the hospital, and the doctors tell him, we're not sure that she's going to be able to overcome this. And so he starts to kind of get her things in order, and he remembers the shoebox. And so he goes into the closet and he gets it from the shelf and he brings it to her in the hospital. And he says, you know, I thought maybe this might be a good time for us to talk about this. And she says, yeah, it would be. So she takes it from him and she opens it and he looks. And inside are these two crocheted dolls. And then this huge wad of cash bundled up and wrapped in a rubber band. And he's like, what is this? And she explains, well, the day before we got married, my grandmother came to me and she told me, whenever you argue with your husband, do everything you can to reconcile. Don't let the tension just keep being there. Do everything you can. Every time you have a fight, every time you disagree, do everything you can to reconcile with your husband. And if you're not able to, then just close your mouth and go crochet a doll. And she says, so that's what I did. And the husband started to tear up. And he's like, I can't believe this. This is 60 years we've been married, and there's only been two times when we haven't been able to reconcile. Two times. And he just felt that much more love for her and appreciation for her, that and how wonderful their relationship had been, and they loved each other truly. And then he said, well, what about this wad of cash? Like, what's that about? And she says, well, every time I crocheted a doll, I went and sold it at the craft fair for $5. Every marriage is an us, and every us introduces tension. There is no way out of it. It's especially true of marriage. You know, before you get married, you're a you, right? There is one of you. And then all of a sudden you say, I do, and suddenly you're two. But those two of you are one us. And all these tensions start to happen. Maybe not right away, you know, but you know what I'm talking about. Because that us comes with a lot of benefits, but it comes with a lot of tensions. Because now you've got to put up with someone else's view of the world, someone else's expectations, someone else's preferences, someone else's desires and dreams. All of a sudden now, it was just you and it was wonderful, and now it's an us, and it causes all this tension. And I'll share just two tensions from my own marriage, right? Simple things. First one, Christina likes to be, well, let me say it this way. I like to be early to things. Christina likes to be what she calls on time, which is actually late. Christina likes to be late. She'll tell you she doesn't like to be late. She'll tell you it just happens. But I say, I like to be early. She likes to be late. And this caused a lot of tension in our marriage for quite a while until we figured out the solution to it and we bought two cars. And now that tension isn't there so much anymore. The other tension, Christina likes to sleep with one normal pillow and everything tucked in nice and neat. And literally she sleeps like, you know, Snow White. Just boom, she falls asleep like that, wakes up like that, perfect and all that. I like to sleep with tons of pillows surrounded by them and everything pulled out and untucked like a tornado. That's how I like to sleep. Now again, that's a tension we have not yet figured out how to resolve. But it occurs to me we could take the two-car approach and just get two beds like the old TV sitcoms and settle it there. There's all these tensions, right? And those are little things. What about tension about money? About jobs? What about tension about kids? About family? About your home? About where to live? Tension about the in-laws? Tension about sex? There's all kinds of tensions in marriage. Marriage is full of tension, but not all tension is created equally. Not all tension is created equally. Some tensions are negative and some tensions are positive. And if you want to know how healthy your marriage is, then what you need to do is pay attention to the tension. Now, I didn't come up with that line, but I think it's a really good line. I actually stole it from someone who stole it from Andy Stanley. But even though I didn't come up with it, I really like it and I think it applies here. If you want to know how healthy your marriage is, pay attention to the tension, because there's going to be tension in your marriage, but not all tension is created equally. Some tension is negative tension. Some tension is positive tension. Pay attention to the tension and then you'll know whether you're growing it on the right track or going in the wrong direction. So let's talk about those two things. Negative tension. The Bible gives us a very clear definition of negative tension and where it comes from James chapter 4. You can turn there or open the app or follow along on the screen. Here's where negative tension comes from. Here's what it is. James 4:1 says, What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet but cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and you fight. I think, just look at that verse. You have desires inside of you. But even inside of you, those desires are fighting because your desires conflict each other. So yes, I desire to read more and get smarter and broaden my perspective on the world, but I also desire to just watch TV. I desire to be healthy and fit, but I also desire to just sit on my couch and watch TV. You desire to have good relationship with your kids and raise really good kids, but you also desire to not have to talk to them, right? We have conflicting desires inside of us, right? So that's already a problem. And then you take me with my conflicting desires and join me together with another me with her conflicting desires. And what do you get? You get war. Because I'm already at war inside myself. And you bring me and then them and you make them an us. And now you get a war of negative tension because we're all just trying to get what we want, but we're still not even sure exactly what we want all the time. And maybe we don't outright kill each other the way James says it here. But I've seen many a couple murder each other with their words or their neglect or their ambivalence or their thoughts. Like just the other day, Christina and I were arguing over the position of our kitchen table. Like we were arguing over 5 inches of difference where it should be. I'm not kidding. 5 inches of difference where our kitchen should be. And at one point, the thought crossed my mind, you know, if I kill her, I could have this table where I want it to be. I didn't really think about killing her. That would make her very upset. But those of you who are married knows what it's like to get stuck in a negative tension conversation and just wish the other person would disappear and be gone and go away. We all know those feelings, and that's the negative tension. That negative tension can be so powerful in your life, in my life, and in our marriages and relationships. It can be so powerful that even if you're praying and praying and praying and praying every day, you will still not see any growth or any change in your marriage and your relationship because that prayer is still coming and still tainted by negative tensions. Negative tensions mess with your prayer. James goes on, the second half of verse 2. He says, you don't have because you're not asking God. So there's problem number one, you're not talking to God about it. But two, even when you're talking to God, negative tension controls how you pray. Verse 3, when you ask, you don't receive because you ask with the wrong motives so that you can basically do what you want to do. You can spend it on your own pleasures. That right there is the source of negative tension in marriage and in any relationship. We each want what we want. We want to build our own little world. We want to do what suits us. We want to build our kingdom on our expectations and on our wants. And you join me like that and someone else like that. And that creates negative tension. We just each want to do what we want to do. And a lot of marriage counseling and a lot of books about marriage, which, look, I suggest you get into those and read books. Go to counseling. Even if your marriage is doing well, go sit every once in a while with a counselor and talk and have them help you check in and make sure you're talking well and arguing well, and all those things are great. Most of that, though, is aimed at convincing two people to surrender their selfish wills and, you know, combine and have a shared will. You know, surrender your, I want to build my kingdom and make it an I want to build our kingdom thing. That's what a lot of marriage counseling is about. A lot of books on marriage are about how to understand each other and work together to build something together instead of just, you know, trying to use the other person for yourself and your pleasure. And, you know, that works a lot of times, but a lot of times it fails too. And I believe marriage can be and should be more than just two people compromising their selfish kingdom-building desires to just reduce the tension in their life. I believe marriage can be more than just managing negative tension so we can get along. I think there's another way. I think there's a better way than just managing negative tensions. Instead, I think there's a way to replace them with positive tension. There is a positive tension that I believe would transform our marriages and all of our relationships, all the us's in our lives. It comes from, surprisingly enough, the prayer Jesus taught his disciples to pray. And you've probably heard and read and recited this prayer maybe thousands of times. But have you ever realized what an incredible guide the prayer Jesus taught us to pray is for our relationships and for all the us's in our lives? Let me just read it to you. It's in the bulletin. It's here on the screen. This is the prayer Jesus taught his disciples to pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Okay, so how does that apply to marriage? And I know some of you might be thinking, oh, I could see right away how it applies to marriage. Deliver us from evil, that's my spouse. But no, there are four parts of this prayer that I think we can apply to every us in our lives. Every us in your life has temptations that need to be avoided, has debts that need to be forgiven, has needs that need to be satisfied. Every one of them. And that's especially true of marriage. And over the next few weeks, we're going to talk and touch on all of those things from the perspective of different relationships. But the one thing every us needs, and especially marriage needs, is a proper center. A husband and wife need to know how they fit together and who the center of their relationship is. They need to understand that of all the us's in your life, this marriage us especially is not just the two of you. It has to include God. And not just include God, but have God as the center. This is the beginning of the prayer again. Just look at it. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come and your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Your marriage is an us, and that us includes God. And more than includes God, that us should be centered around God and his will. Otherwise, we get hung up on all the negative tensions of just the me and the you of the us. We need a positive center to work toward. And that's what God is, the tension of building God's kingdom together, of building heaven on earth here together, God's will being done in our marriage on earth as it is in heaven, right? That's a positive tension that will transform us and even transform the negative tensions that we all go through. So yes, marriage should be and could be heaven on earth, but only when it's centered on God. It'll never be that when you're just managing the negative tensions that come from your own selfish desires. Instead, focusing on the positive tension of figuring out how can our marriage honor God, not just please me, build a marriage that gets me beyond just the smallness of my life and just the smallness of my marriage to something much more vast, much more extreme than that. And the funny thing is that when you both do that, when you both focus on the positive tension of how are we going to build God's kingdom and focus on God in our relationship, all that other stuff, it falls into place because you're focusing on the positive tension. Here's what I mean by that. The positive tension that of trying to pursue God's kingdom. First of all, when you look at your wife, husbands, you're not just looking at the woman who you love, who you convinced to marry you. Right? You're not also not just looking at the woman who's nagging you all the time about leaving your laundry on the floor. Remember how this prayer starts. It starts with our Father. So husband and wife, when you get on your knees to pray before you go to bed, or when you wake up in the morning, when you're sitting at a meal, when you pray, pray this prayer, and you pray our Father, let that remind you that both you and your spouse are children of God together. And that, yes, your marriage relationship will endure throughout your days on this earth, but there's another relationship you have that is eternal, and that is your relationship as brother and sister in God's kingdom. Children of one Father. You belong to his house. You're building his house, not your house. And that relationship has to orbit around God. If it doesn't orbit around God, it goes nowhere. It's dead. So instead of arguing for the 89th time about the same thing, and each of you trying to have your own way or make your point, if instead you begin focusing on the positive tension of God being the center and trying to pursue his will, then you stop and you ask and you pray together, God, what would honor you in this situation? What would honor you in this decision we need to make? What would please you, God, because we're about pursuing your will together, not pursuing our individual wills. And most of all, If you stop and ask him, Lord, how can the way we go through this situation, how can the way we go through this conflict honor you and acknowledge that you're our Father, that we're not the ones in charge? Replace that negative tension of trying to get your own way with the positive tension of both of you trying to pursue God's way and live his way, because he's the Father, he's the leader. His will is what matters. And believe me, that will not eliminate tension in your marriage. That tension's going to be there, but it will help replace the negative tension driven by selfishness with a new positive tension driven by a desire for what God has for you together with him as the center, that helps you see who you are and how you fit together in him. Look, if your marriage is about negative tensions where you're both just building your own kingdoms, the best you can hope for is to manage those negative tensions through compromise, where one or both of you has to lose pretty much all the time. Right? It's the best you can hope for. If that's all your marriage is about, is just manage the negative tensions through compromise, then you're always losing to some extent. But if your marriage, if you recognize that God's the center of it and embrace the positive tension of trying to pursue him, that God is not just part of the us, he's the center of the us, that's when you begin to truly win at marriage, because now you're focused on what he has for you. And so you both surrender your wills to his will. And guess what? His will is better than yours. His will for you is far greater than anything you could want for yourself. If the greatest pleasure you've ever known in life is getting your way, then you don't know what joy is. The greatest pleasure in life is living God's way. So, you know, I want to illustrate this. I need Melissa and Dan. Come here a second. Yeah, I told Dan, I didn't tell Melissa. Sorry. And they're not fighting. Dan's just helping today in the sound booth. That's why they're sitting on different parts of the church. But Dan and Melissa, come here. And know that Dan said okay, so if you're mad at him for this, then, you know. So here, I want the two of you, you're just going to, whatever I say, you do it. I'm going to give you, like, you know, just a couple things to say. I'm going to say my way, and when I say my way, I want you to turn and cross your arms and face each other. Okay, so my way. Okay. When I say our way, I want you to, so get a little closer, like where you're afraid you might get hit. Okay, when I say our way, I want you to hold hands and face that way. Our way. All right, good. Most of the time in marriage, we say marriage isn't good when we're living our way.
Oh, our way.
Oh, no, sorry.
I'm already fighting.
Melissa, no, Melissa did the right thing. I said the wrong thing. Dan followed what I said. Melissa followed what I meant. Isn't that an interesting part of marriage? Most of the time, marriage isn't going well when we're each going my way. Right? And when we're like this, we'd say things aren't going well. What we're hoping for is to have more of our way in marriage. And, you know, what we're hoping for is to have more our way than my way. Right? And if we can have less of this and more of the our way, then we're doing well. Just as long as we have more time in the our way thing, we're okay. And then, you know, every once in a while, we may get some my way. As long as it's short and we go back to our way quickly, we feel good. And oftentimes, this is kind of our dream for marriage. Let it just be as much our way as we can, right? And we'll have to deal with the my way stuff. But the truth is, we're back and forth all the time between my way and our way. What I'm offering you today is just a whole new thing. It says God's way. Turn, hold hands, and just look at the cross. Just let that visual fill your mind. Right? So as you go out of here today later on, and you're like, well, what does this look like? What is this going to be like? You know, it's not going to be the my way. See how do they... It's good to be stuck in God's way. That's good. It's not going to be the my way. It's not going to be the our way. It's going to be the God's way. And just have that picture and talk about that picture. All right, guys, you can go. Thanks. Traumatized you with the... You know, right soon after teaching this prayer to his disciples, Jesus told them a story about two guys who were building a house. And I'm, you know, sad Sam mentioned cornerstones today. Jesus talked about this one guy went and built his house, and it took a while. He built it on rock. And it takes a while to build like that. It's not easy. It's more difficult. But he built his house on rock, and then storms came because storms come. There's no way around that. You cannot avoid the storms in marriage, in any relationship you have. Storms come, the house stood fine and proud and strong. There's another guy who built, and he was very proud. He built his house really fast because he built it on sand. And you know what? It was just quicker. He got it up and was like, ha ha, I'm done already. That guy's just barely got the foundations done. And there he is in his house on the sand. And you all know the story, right? The rains and the storms come because they're going to come. You will not avoid them. And it just washes out the sand, washes out the foundation, and the house collapses. And he loses everything. And what Jesus is saying to them is pay attention to the tension in your marriage. That's how I'm going to take it and apply it to you. Pay attention to the tension in your marriage. It will tell you whether you're building on rock or building on sand. If the tension in your marriage is coming from the negative things of each of you just trying to get your own way, you're building on sand. The great news is you can stop and you can turn and make the tension about God. How can we honor you with these decisions? How can we honor you with where we spend our money, how we talk to one another, how we treat our kids, how we treat our, all that stuff, right? All the stuff of marriage. God, how can I honor you by the way I treat my wife, the way I talk to her, the way I caress her, the way I help provide for her, right? How can I care for my husband, the way I help provide for him, the way I help care for him, the way I talk to him? When you start making it about how am I going to honor God because he's the center of our marriage and his will is what matters, that's when you'll begin to build on rock, right? And even if you're married to someone who's not a Christian, I think Jesus shows us it's possible to create a relationship standard because Jesus created a relationship standard for us. Where even though we were sinners and rejecting him, he still chose to honor God's will. And you can do that too, even if your marriage is one where the other person isn't wanting to go God's way. We'll talk about more about that later. Listen, pay attention to the tension in your marriage. It'll tell you what you're building on. You can treat your marriage like a me thing and destroy it quickly. You can recognize your marriage an us thing and do your best to go your own way and manage the tensions. Or you can recognize that God is the center of this us and begin to live a strong married life and embrace that positive tension of building that marriage his way. And then, yeah, the waves are going to come and you're going to stand strong. So this morning, I want to give you just a way to put this into practice maybe, or a way to think about it. So I want you to make two lists as a couple. And you can write this down in the bulletin in the notes part, or it's here on the screen, the two things. It's in the app too, and you can follow along there. Two lists as a couple that you're going to make. One is all the things that keep you stuck in the negative tensions of your conflicting wills, right? That could be maybe situations that are working against you, meddling outsiders, bad breaks you've had, misaligned expectations, you got married too young, or whatever, all kinds of things. What are the things that keep you stuck in the negative tensions of your conflicting wills? How is your spouse getting in the way of you getting what you want, what you'd like to have, right? All that stuff, that's one list. The other list, I want you to write all the privileges and advantages and opportunities you have in pursuing God's will together, building heaven on earth together. What are all the privileges and opportunities and advantages you have doing that together? The support of having partnership, shared understandings and different perspectives that come together, trust, accountability, enlarged perspective on life, all that stuff, right? List all the privileges. And then here's what I want you to do after you've made these two lists. You're not going to do it now. You're going to go home and do it. I want you to take one of those lists, and I want you to put it in a drawer somewhere, okay? Just put it in a drawer somewhere, and then I want you to take the other list, and I want you to tape it to the mirror in your bathroom. You can take one list, put it in a drawer somewhere, take the other list, and tape it to the mirror in your bathroom. And then I want you to read the list in the drawer once every few months or maybe once a year, just so you don't forget it, just so you know it's there. And the other list I want you to read every day. The one you've got on that mirror, read it every day. Because that will determine what you notice, how you interpret what you see, the story you'll tell yourself about your marriage and what's happening and what's going to happen in the future. That list you focus on every day whether it's the positive tension list or the negative tension list, that's going to shape your marriage. That's going to shape your relationship. You get to pick which list goes where. Picking which list goes where is possibly the most important decision you'll make this year for your marriage. Which list are you going to put on the mirror? Which list are you going to stick in the drawer? And in the bulletin, there's that connect card. So everybody take that out and look at those next steps. If you haven't done it yet, write your name on that. If you're new, write your email or phone number. Check off if you're first or second time. But I want you to look at the next steps and think about what next steps are you going to take today? You could say, I'm going to talk to my spouse about the right tension in our marriage, positive tension. We're going to have that conversation. You could check off, I'm going to ask my spouse to forgive my selfishness. Or you're going to check off, I'm going to forgive my spouse's selfishness. And those of you who are not married and never will be, what are you going to do to make the other us's in your life more centered around God and not centered around what you want? Right? And those of you who aren't married yet, but maybe someday you will be, what will you do today to prepare yourself to be the kind of person who will focus on positive tension when you do get married, focus on making God the center and looking for someone else who wants God to be the center of your marriage, not settling for someone just because they're attractive to you or they seem nice to you, but no, committing to, I'm going to find someone who is committed to living the positive tension of making God the center of our relationship. All right, so think about that if that's where you're at. And the servers are going to come, and as they do, I want you to take a moment and fill that card out as we get ready to serve communion. So servers and musicians, would you come? Let's get ready to celebrate communion.